like polyamory and polygamy and all that kind of stuff. I really appreciate all of that communication, and just like it really helps me form like an understanding, and like I knew absolutely nothing before I started reading your books. So
wow, thanks. That feels really nice to hear you say. Thank you. Makes my little heart sore.
That there is the voice of Sophie Lucido Johnson, an incredibly bright and beautiful being who has written the books Many Love and Love Without Sex. And they are incredible and have now taught me so much about polyamory and language and relationships and love. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And I'm so excited that you're here for this conversation. So thank you for tuning in to the Feelcast today.
How about you? How are you feeling about being in the world?
Being in the world is hard.
That's true.
We had talked a lot before the episode started. Now, before this next part, I just wanted to add a little precursor that I checked in with Tom before we recorded this conversation and before I'm putting this out to you, and he's totally okay with me completely oversharing.
It's really hard. Yeah, I mean, I'll just overshare completely.
I can't wait.
My partner and I have just been like going through this thing and like, you know, starting the baby steps of ethical non-monogamy. And so that's a really scary place to be.
What made you guys decide to do that? That's like a huge, how long have you been together?
Yeah, we've been together 6 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
It's a long time. And so falling into like really comfortable patterns with each other, and also like just a mismatch of libido, emotional standing at the moment. My partner Tom's been going through a pretty heavy depression over the last year, and he's trying to figure out what feelings are. And I'm a person with too many feelings, so we're just completely polar opposites in that kind of sense. And so he's just kind of on this independent journey at the moment, which kind of made me feel really alone. Over the last year. And yeah, so trying to figure out what moving forward looks like, how we can both feel supported, because like he's existing with this like extra pressure to, you know, be my one source of love, especially where we're away from family. He's got family in the UK, my family's in Ontario, and you know, we just moved 2 years ago to here, and so we don't have that sense of community yet. And how do we build that, and what does that look like, and where are the boundaries in that? So it's a journey, it's wild. And I last week moved into the spare room.
Now I just want to add in here, at a later date, it's now been a month of having my own space, and it's been amazing. And I got the idea from Sophie's book, Many Love, when she talks about living with two friends who were in a relationship but had separate rooms. And it's just created this complete air of independence. Tom really struggled to ask for time alone. And so now it's just implied every day that, you know, for some time in like to have the space to be separate, it's great. I'm making more art because I have the space to do so, and we're not having to regulate our independent habits or rituals or self-care practices around each other's energy and time. And it's meant that we're also having intentional affection instead of just habitual affection. So like hugging while the kettle boils in the morning, or, you know, having like a little goodnight cuddle before we sleep in separate beds. I'm also sleeping really well. And it's just been a beautiful thing and something that I really value and that I didn't realize was going to be as monumental and wonderful as it is. So if you've ever thought about having your own space or like creating a little space in your house for yourself that feels really nice and is filled with all of the things that you love, and everything is exactly where you left it when you go back into that space, I would definitely recommend it. I mean, we're so used to relationship models looking a specific way and seeing them represented a certain way. And I think that it's misconstrued that people having their own space means that they're not okay together.
Was not malicious in any way, but just wanted to create physical independent space for a little bit. And it's been really nice because I end up drawing until midnight. Mm-hmm. And Tom can listen to Lord of the Rings until he goes to sleep and it's not annoying. So so it's That's kind great. Of nice in that way. And then we have regular like connection time in between that. So yeah, so that's wow. been eating up all of my brain space.
Sure, that makes sense. And of course, like all of that during a global pandemic, to be just like dealing with those huge evolutionary strides and the growing pains of all of that while the whole country is like totally different than ever before, is that's a lot to hold for right? one pair of people.
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah.
Well, Godspeed, man. I mean, it's it's definitely, it sounds like you guys are doing really beautiful work, but I know how hard it is and like gutting and like exhausting and life.
Yeah, it just feels
taking
like
over
roller coaster at the moment.
Yeah, get that.
But yeah, so that's the place I'm in at the moment.
Well, thank you for sharing. That is not an overshare. That is really lovely to know about. And it makes me, it's like, oh, I just want to talk about that for this whole time. But but we don't have time. But also, I don't believe in too many feelings. So I think that your feelings are perfect.
That's and, so validating.
And I think that's super interesting. And I appreciate knowing your context. That's like a really intense place to be emotionally and on like, I don't know, your life journey or whatever. It's like really, yeah. really intense. I'm excited for you. And like, I think it seems like things are gonna change and that's painful and scary. And but also really cool things come out of change. It's kind of all there is. It's not really anything else. So, kind of exciting moment. This also sounds really tiring.
Yeah, it can be exhausting at times. No, thank you for hearing that and for validating those feelings. It's really, really lovely. I'm gonna do my cheesy little intro and introduce
great.
You to this
Let's
podcast
do it.
And then we'll jump in if that feels good for you.
It feels great.
Okay. Welcome to the Kinda Okay podcast, where we talk about things that aren't okay in hopes of making them feel more okay. If nothing else, this podcast aims to help us all feel just a little less alone. I'm Sarah Crossley, creator of It's Kinda Okay Comics and the Growing Pains Zine, an independent publication created by rad women and non-binary creatives. I'm here today with Sophie Lucido Johnson, an amazing cartoonist and wonderful writer from Chicago. Well, from Oregon, but in Chicago, author of Love Without Sex and Many Love. Thanks so much for joining me here today, Sophie.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
What are your pronouns before we begin?
Thanks for asking. I use she, her pronouns.
And what's feeling kind of okay for you today?
Okay. What's feeling kind of okay? So last year, my backyard... I'll back up. Like 2 years ago, my backyard was like the best place in the world for me. And it just made me very happy to be there. And then last year we had too many chickens. We had nine. Suddenly we found ourselves with nine chickens and one is a rooster. And as a person who likes chickens, I wanted to let them like roam in the yard, but like nine is a lot of chickens to roam in your yard. And it just turned into like a very traumatic summer in terms of like some like the chickens died and like horrible things happened to them. But also like they pooped all over the yard and they destroyed all of the crops and like they brought in a bunch of rats. And it was just like there was some really hard parts of the summer. I definitely, as I'm talking about this now, like realize I need to write about it, but because there's so many things that happened. But this year I decided to like compromise and like make their run space that is sort of enclosed just bigger, which cuts them off from the whole yard, but it gives them like a ton of space, and they got them a lot of toys and stuff to like jump on and play with. And so now my plants are growing and I can just sit and watch my chickens. And today I'm just getting like all these new plants I didn't ever have a chance to get last year because the chickens ate and scratched and destroyed them. And that's kind of okay. It's like pretty great. I really felt happy today. The chickens escaped one time and they like immediately went for this like wildflower patch that I'm growing for our bees. And I was like, see, this is why you can't have nice things. You like have this whole yard and you've chosen just like the delicate tendrils of wildflowers. I mean, just come on, you guys. But also we built a window looking into, you didn't ask for all this. We built a window looking into our yard and I made a sign for people to come and look in the window. And so now the chickens also have all these friends who are our neighbors and their kids who bring them like worms and stuff. And that's kind of okay too. So I think my yard is feeling kind of okay.
That's amazing. I love that. That's great. I've been really liking seeing the toys for your chickens on your Instagram stories.
It's only like a small fraction of the toy. Like, I thank you for saying that. And like, I withhold some toys because it really starts to seem like I have a problem.
Lots of love for the chickens. Hey, they wake up every morning and sometimes they choose violence. A lot of the times they choose violence.
The rooster always chooses violence. Like, and I know that's his nature. And like, I saved him from, like, he was dead as a chick. And I thought he was a girl at the time. But but then I saved him and we were so close and we hung out all the time. And I was like so in love with him. And then he just, like, his nature caught up with him and he just loves to attack and bite and kick but he's protecting his flock. He like, you know, he's doing the thing that he came into the world to do and he's doing it very well. It's just not like, it's not it doesn't make sense with humans, but I love him. I can't let him go. But
does he have a name?
Foot. His name is Foot. Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Roosters can be tricky. I lived on a blueberry farm.
Cool.
Last year.
Wow.
And somehow the farm just kept taking in chickens. So we had like two different bits of chickens. And then at one point they thought that they only had two roosters, but then it turned out they had three roosters. Uh-oh. And that just caused a bunch of chaos and they spent a long time trying to, you know, find another home for this rooster because nobody wants roosters.
That's true.
The drama of chickens.
How was it to live on a blueberry farm? That sounds cool. Was it as cool as it sounds or was it not as cool as it sounds?
It was cool in ways and not cool in other ways. So
Everything cool. else that life has to offer.
Yeah, pretty much. Everything's got duality. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. My partner, Tom, and I were living in an 18-foot travel trailer.
Whoa.
That was completely rotten when we got into it. So we had to tear it all apart and rebuild it all. And then
in this
really tiny space together. Which is great in the summer because like you spend all your time outside anyway, hanging out with the blueberries and the horses and the chickens. But then in the winter it was very hard.
Yeah, that sounds hard. Well, what an adventure. Yeah. What an adventure for your memoirs.
Yeah. Well, and unlimited access to blueberries is definitely something to strive for in life.
Blueberries are like my number one favorite thing. That is like a thing, that is like an object, just because I think they are magical. I think they're truly magical. How can they taste that good and like also be that good for you? That seems wrong.
And to be so blue on the outside, but not blue on the inside.
And they just like, and to taste good warm and cold and really cold. Wow.
Yeah. God. That was a lot. A lot going on for blueberries.
It's true.
I mean, let's jump into it. Let's talk about all of the things that I've been learning about by reading your books.
Okay, I can't wait. Thank you for reading them. I feel always some kind of way about, I like writing books and I like talking about love a lot, but I always, it's such a big ask of someone's time. Like here, I've written, you know, 30,000 words and I'm just going to like expect that you will take the time to read them. And I think, you know, you also make comics. So I feel like one of the things I like about comics is that it takes so long and that like then people, when they're giving you their time, you know, you are being gracious because you've, you know, created something that took you so long that like it feels like a gift that you give to somebody. And sometimes when you write just regular writing, I feel a little bit more like it's asking for something from a reader, like, please, please just trust that this will be worth all the time you're going to give to it. So I really appreciate it. And it means a lot to me that you spent that time with those books.
I enjoyed it so much. And I honestly listened to them. So it was like two really long podcasts that felt like an ologies episode about love and about your life. So, I mean, I'm coming into this interview knowing pretty much a lot about you.
Whoa. I can't wait to tell my girlfriend that and my husband that someone compared me to ologies. It's going to really make them feel proud to know me.
Good. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. So thanks for writing them. It was like a thesis on love.
Well, that's nice. That feels good.
How do you define polyamory for yourself?
Yeah. So polyamory comes from, you know, the words polyamory, poly, many, and amory, love, the two different root languages, which I really like because it sort of mashes up. It's in that, and that to me, that is indicative of what polyamory is, which is sort of a mashed up, like non-definition of a thing. And many love is sort of at the heart of it for me, where it's just like, you just love many people, period, the end. And sometimes that can be challenging for folks because they're very attached to the idea that monogamy allows for other kinds of love. And I think that people's definition for monogamy can allow for other types of love. And I just would prefer to explode that whole structure for myself. So for me, polyamory doesn't have anything to do with sex. It's just about love and making space for loving a lot of people in lots of different ways. And also, I think a big part of it for me recently has been about getting your needs met and like keeping in mind that your needs are not going to be met by one person. It is possible that there are like two people out there who are so exactly perfect for each other that they meet all of each other's needs. I'm not saying that's impossible. I've never seen that, but it is possible. It's possible that such a thing exists. However, it's unusual. And so thinking about what things do you need to feel fulfilled and content and safe probably being the most important ones, and making sort of like a list of those things and then figuring out, you know, who can you bring into your life who will help you to meet those different needs? And also, what needs can you provide for other people without changing who you are and like having to bend over backward to accommodate somebody who you love, but you know, you can't necessarily, I think it's a lot to ask someone to change. I don't think people should ask each other to change. I think change does happen, but you know, it's sort of knowing your limits and your boundaries. So needs, limits, boundaries, lots of love. And sort of being in, I think relationships don't necessarily need to be dramatic. I think that actually television knows that. And that's why they won't put happy poly people on TV. I've never seen myself on TV. I've seen poly people on TV, but it's like, this is not what my life is like at all. But I understand that there'd be no conflict for your show without if everyone's relationships were just functioning this well. Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I watch a dramatic romance, I'm like, oh, if they just communicated openly and honestly, there'd be no plot. So
right. Yeah, exactly. We all want the plot. I don't know. I feel like they could reach an ending. I watch a lot. I love Grey's Anatomy. I watch a lot of Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. I feel a lot like, excuse me, you guys all like love many, many people. Couldn't you just like figure that out and just be fine with it? You're a very progressive television show. Like, why can't you just like let your characters love many people and be okay with it? What is this like? But jealousy is such a driving force and conflict and drama and what I guess we want to watch. However, I think I learned it from TV and like movies. It's like not really inherent. So for me, at least now that I have like, oh, but it doesn't feel, I don't miss it. I'm not like, oh, I'm just fighting this jealousy that's like creeping up on me all the time. It doesn't feel inherent for, but that's just me also. People are different.
Yeah, but there's something to say, and like this is why I really enjoyed Love Without Sex, because you talk a lot about representation in it. And I think that, yeah, we model the relationship types that we see in the world, whether that's the people closest to us or the people on TV or in movies. And so when we encounter situations or situations of love that don't look like that, then it's super foreign and confusing and difficult to navigate because we don't have any waypoints for it. So I think representation is really important. And I like what you say, like, you know, for especially progressive TV shows to see how that could be different.
Sure.
Yeah, I really enjoyed watching the new series of Tales of the City.
Oh, I don't even know what that is. What is that?
Tales of the City is an incredible TV show. In 2019, they did kind of a reboot of it, but the original series, it was a book that was like written in the 80s and then filmed in the 90s. Anyway, it focuses on this boarding house turned apartment complex that's owned by Anna Madrigal at 28 Barbary Lane. And all of the members of this kind of community become part of what Maupin coined a logical family and what we would, I think, today call a chosen family. And it focuses on poverty, transgender, racial struggles. It's just a beautiful, beautiful show that shows what different relationship models can look like.
I think you'd really enjoy it.
Oh,
it's got Elliot Page in it, and it's incredible. The new series of it has got like the same characters and same storylines, but in the modern day.
Cool. I can't wait. Thank you for the recommendation.
It just shows different types of relationships and relationship models. And I think like watching that and seeing that, I was like, oh, things don't have to look the way that we're so used to them looking. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one.
Awesome. I'll check it out. Thank you. I really need something new to watch anyway, so I'm excited that you told me about it.
What does self-love look like for you?
That's such a good question. Self-love. Yeah, I think that it's the buzz language around it is self-compassion. And I was trying to remember, I've definitely heard people, there's a woodpecker out there. Oh my goodness, look at it go. It's migration here in Chicago. That's kind of okay too. So sorry that like compassion means just like not wishing ill upon yourself. And like love is about wishing positive things or like good, happy things. And so it's sort of like a compassion just being like, I don't wish anything bad for this person. And it is sort of interesting how hard that is to do for yourself. Not that like we wish bad things that will happen to us, but that I think we're really good at beating ourselves up. And maybe that's not everybody. I'm really good at beating myself up. I really know the things that I don't want to hear, and I know how to say them to myself in a spiral for like an hour or two or a week. So for me, it's like unlearning that. And it's a spell that needs to be broken, because I think I believed for a long time that like you had to hate yourself because that kept you safe somehow. Like if I hate myself enough, like I won't be surprised or attacked. Like I'll have this like toughness or veneer, and it's not true. It's completely false. It just sort of means that when someone is cruel to you, you're like, oh, I shouldn't feel so bad. I knew this would happen. And then you feel worse about how you inevitably react when someone hurts you, and then you hurt yourself. And so I actually think it's only been the last like 3 years that I've done any amount of work of like really letting this go, this like attachment to self-loathing. And it, a lot of times it means that you have to rest. And I think that is also super hard because we live in a capitalist world, and rest is sort of part of the capitalist system where people are like, oh, you have to get like a bunch of sleep machines and get enough sleep. But in order to be more productive, as though productivity is this like, you know, thing that will save you or like make you happy. And actually like rest makes you a lot happier than productivity, and just sort of like finding moments of calm and like being okay with not doing things, and just like being where you, being okay with who you are, where you are. I think something I'm thinking about a lot is like how we raise children in a couple of different ways. Like there's this one school of thought that says like, oh, every special and excellent and like incredible. And like, you know, you need to make your child know that no matter what, they're so special and so incredible and so excellent. There's this other school of thought that's like, not everybody can be special and not everybody can be amazing. And so you have to work really, really hard in order to achieve those things. And I'm not going to like just reward you for existing. And like, those are these like two dichotomous ways that we raise children. And I think there's this like other way where it's like, you are good enough as you are, just like everybody else. Like you are not extraordinary, and that is fine. And like, nobody needs to be extraordinary. You can just be like loved and safe and cared for. And hopefully you will like carry that forth into your life and take care of the people who you meet, because you don't have to hold on to all this trauma of needing to be exceptional. Like, I don't know that it being exceptional is really like all it's cracked up to be. But but I do think that everybody is like worthy of safety, love, and protection, and is enough. And that is something that I don't know that we teach children. So believing yourself to be just enough where you are as you are, I think is sort of, I'm sorry, I really rambled there on this answer.
I love it.
Obviously it's on my mind, but because it's a hard one. It's hard. Cause you just do still end up like, despite all these nice things I'm saying, like on the bathroom floor being like, I hate myself and I'm such a bad person. And, but you know, if I wasn't a bad person, then I wouldn't be here crying. And it still happens. And I'm in my 30s. So it's like time to stop doing that. But also that's just where I'm at right now. So yeah. That's fine. And
well, and it's interesting to like catch yourself in those moments and to be like, oh, I'm doing that thing again.
It is. It's very hard not to fall into the trap of, I'm doing that thing again. Stop doing that thing. Stop doing that thing. Like it, because as soon as you start trying to stop doing the thing, it really just gets worse, and it's paradoxical like that. So it is interesting, but it's also like, ugh. The only thing you can do is, the only thing I have ever known to work is to be like, oh, I'm beating myself up again. That's okay. That's fine. So I'm saying mean things to myself. That's fine. This is fine. I'm sad. I'm having a hard time. And like just repeating all these things you don't want to have be true, because they are true. So yeah.
No, thank you for that. I think it's, I mean, like the self-loathing is protection. Like that's a limiting belief that can limit, you know, your ability to connect with yourself, I think, at times. And then also, like, I love this idea of, like, we're so used to putting everybody on a pedestal, or, like, people who are, you know, we're child prodigies or whatever, and we hold them in really high regard because, you know, they started so young. And I really like this idea of, like, everybody's on a pedestal. Their pedestals are just for different things. And so we're all on the same kind of playing field, just everybody's got, you know, different things that make them extra special. And it just means everybody's special, but they're special for different reasons. So I really like that. And I like the way of looking at that rather than it being such a harsh, like, binary of, like, this way or the other way. So I think that's a really beautiful thing. And I mean, it takes so long to have the kind of self-awareness that you're talking about, where you can recognize those patterns within yourself, hold space for yourself to feel those big feelings. And yeah, I think, like, that's the only way we really move through them. Cause I, like, yeah, when you try and stop them, that's when it's like, okay, now we're going down the drain in a really big spiral and we'll just stay at the bottom for a week or two until we can crawl back out.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So yeah, I really resonate with that. I mean, I really want people to go read your books or listen to them.
I enjoyed Many Loves so much and I can't recommend it anymore. So I'm going to plug it in here again and tell you that it is a memoir of polyamory and finding loves. And it's just this incredible memoir of Sophie's life, a glimpse into just her wonderful way of being. And it's a love letter to everyone she has ever cared for. So you can listen to it on Audible. You can buy it online. Better yet, you could request it from your independent local bookshop. And they will get it in for you, and then you can read it and enjoy it, and there's illustrations, and there's so much information, and you'll really love it.
So I don't want to ask too many questions that you answer in Love Without Sex and Many Love, but what helps you be open and vulnerable to the people that you love?
That's nice of you. There's like two parts of my brain. One is like, that's nice of... Oh, I didn't ask your pronouns. I was like about to use one and I'm not sure which ones you use. Sorry.
Could she hear?
She heard great. She heard. I was like, that was nice of her to want to do that. And then you asked what something about vulnerability is that I got like distracted by you being nice to me and I sort of went off on a brain tangent. Can you just ask one more time? Just the second part. Yeah.
What helps you to be open and vulnerable to the people you love?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Time, right? Like it takes time. And I think, and I'm like a very big proponent of radical honesty and sort of like, which is not to say like, if someone's hair looks bad, you say your hair looks bad today, but it is to not lie to people, just because you're afraid of hurting them. And I think that there's no incentive to telling the truth. I just think there's like just none. There's no cultural incentive for it at all. You never tell the truth about something and someone just says, oh my gosh, I like really appreciate you telling the truth about that thing. You get someone to say, maybe I appreciate you telling the truth about that thing. Now there's a consequence for this thing that you've done or that you've said. Mm-hmm. And it's so like, you don't like walk away thinking, oh, I told the truth and I feel good about it. You walk away thinking like, oh, I told the truth and there was like a consequence that was unpleasant for me. And so what's another way to do this? And then you learn to lie and you just spend your whole lives lying to each other. And yeah, I think that I really grew up believing that I was like a pathological liar, but I wasn't. I just, that's just a strategy people use who are traumatized. And it's very useful one. It's sometimes really important for people to lie in order to stay safe. And so how do you build relationships where you make it safe for other people to tell the truth to you? And that's a really hard question because like sometimes someone will come in with the truth and it will make you feel like hurt or scared or mm-hmm. sad or angry. Like, hey, here's a really good example. Hey, I was at a party last night and I was a little drunk and I was with this girl and I made out with her and I didn't like ask you and you're my partner and we don't kiss other people and I made out with this other woman. And like the reaction to that is always going to be something unpleasant, like negative anger. So I think there's like this separation at that point where you have the reaction and you say like, okay, thank you so much for sharing that with me. I really appreciate that we're in a relationship where you can tell me the truth, it actually means so much to me. And I'm feeling reactive, like I'm having a reaction. And I want you to know that our relationship is safe, but I need to just take some space with my reaction that I'm having for a little while. And then we'll come back and talk about it. And I just, yeah, I mostly want you to walk away from this interaction knowing that like, this was absolutely like this thing that you've done, telling me the truth about this, like makes me feel so much like gratitude and like love for you. And I'm having this other emotional reaction that's separate from that. And I need to go deal with that because it's really like, I have to go deal with, because when we speak out of reactivity, it's just, it's always going to be hurtful, and it's going to come out as defensive and become argumentative. And that doesn't encourage someone to tell me the truth again. So we screw up, people, we make mistakes. We like do things that hurt other people, and we don't live in a world where like, that's okay. Like mistakes are not normalized. They are not treated as okay. If you get caught in a mistake, you're in trouble. If you tell the truth about a mistake, you're doing it so you won't get caught or get in trouble, according to like the cultural narrative. Mm-hmm. So the result is always going to be you're in trouble. And how are you going to not get caught? And how are you going to like, you know, stay emotionally safe? And we also justify it always with like, I just don't want this person to get hurt. I just don't want to hurt this person. When really like, we just don't want to feel the punishment or like the punitive like reaction that comes from telling the truth. So that's all to say, like years of doing that in relationships where you mm-hmm. say, thank you for telling me the truth. I need to take some space from my reaction, come back to the table. We talk for 2.5 hours about like, why do you think you kissed that person? Why do you think you drank all of that alcohol that made you kiss that person? Like, this is how it made me feel when I heard that. And like, this is, you know, what I'm wondering. And this is like what my trust has like changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I want to figure out how we can reestablish that. Or do we need to reestablish it? Or like, is our relationship needing to change? And then those conversations are super long and often really hard, but they don't feel unsafe. Like it's not an argument. It's not like an ultimatum. It's not like I'm going to leave because you've done something. It's a conversation that needs to happen as a result of something harmful.
Yeah. Well, there's so much power to that. And I can definitely appreciate that something in myself, like I'm starting to get better at, to be like, I'm having a reaction and like, I need to go away so that I'm not just spiteful and angry and hurt. And then, you know, cause usually it's like have a massive blow up and then go and assess my feelings and then be able to communicate them really well later and to hear the other person. I was one of those kids that like, I would also say I was a pathological liar as a kid, which is interesting to me. And I was one of those kids where I would get both my sister and I grounded, and she would have to convince me to go tell the truth so that she wasn't grounded.
Are you older or younger?
Younger.
Interesting.
So that's an interesting just reflection in my brain as you were talking about that. I was like, oh.
It is like, I think so much more common than we think, because lying is thought of as so shameful that like, it's not something we come out and talk about very often. And I think most people think they've told lies that are worse than anybody else has ever told a lie. Like, because you're not going to admit it. There's no incentive to telling the truth when you've gone away with the lie for so long or whatever. Yeah. I think it's very common. I really, really do. It's very like very useful protective strategy. And it's an adaptation that we use to keep ourselves safe, and it makes sense. And like, yeah, how do you make relationships where it becomes okay to tell the truth? I mean, it's like really hard to unlearn all of the adaptations you learned in childhood to deal with whatever you're going through in childhood. You said you don't like, you like have to go take some time to like react, and because otherwise you'll be spiteful and angry. Like spite and anger are just such valid feelings also, and just like such normal reactions and like are such okay things to feel. And I think polyamory, like, or whatever comes into play here too, because sometimes you can just, it's helpful to take space from that person and go to like another trusted person and sort of like figure out how to discharge some of the stuff you're holding so you don't have to like be alone with it. And it's helpful if you have a network of support so that your partner or your person who you're having the reaction with feels okay with you talking to someone else about it. It's just all kind of like builds over time. And anyway, I think it's very normal for people to lie and then think that they that they lie more than other people. It's, I think, normal.
Yeah, well, there's validation in that, right? I think it's been really interesting. So I've been talking with my counselor recently, and she brought up something that I hadn't really ever considered before. And it's like nicety conversation when people are like, oh, hi, how are you? I always take that, like, I try to be really genuine and like, you know, practice radical honesty. And so when I'm not okay, I tend to share that in hopes that it makes other people feel okay, that it's okay to share when they're not okay. And she brought up something. She was like, do you feel like disingenuous when you just say I'm fine, or you skirt over that if it's not somebody that you would normally like share all of those things with? And so that's an interesting thing to navigate, that I'm like, oh, does everybody deserve like my full truthful story all the time? And is that fair to ask of other people? So we've been talking a lot in a lot of my friendships of like asking if people are open, asking if they have the energy for, you know, whatever big feelings are going on. And if they don't, then we don't share those. And I think that that's a really nice little consent check.
Yeah.
Even when it comes to friendships, to just be like, look, are you open to me just completely unloading?
Yeah, totally. And I agree that that like it, I do think it takes time for people to earn the trust that's required for telling the truth. Like, yeah, you shouldn't, it's not safe to tell the truth to everybody. It just is not. And so you have to build relationships like that over time. And it, I've also like done, I feel really connected to the things you're saying. And that when I met my most recent therapist, she like interrupted me in the middle of saying something. And this is our first session. She was like, you shouldn't trust me enough to share that with me yet. She's like, you don't know me. And like, I think that we need to slow down. And I was like, you know, that I was a moment where I was like, oh, you're a good therapist. And I like keep you, you're like a good fit for me. Cause you're, I feel like I know everything and you're sort of slowing me down. And that was helpful for me, because I agree, I'm also like a feelings on my sleeve person, but it just isn't always like safe, and honesty and truthfulness is, that's like a gift that you give people as well as like one that you receive.
I like that. Kind of changes the way that you think about it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about so many wonderful sounding humans in Many Love, like so many. But especially like Kim and Hannah, those ones really stood out to me. And one part that I really liked was when you were talking about how Kim had bangs and so you had to get bangs. And I just wonder, like, do you ever find it difficult to stop yourself from like completely immersing yourself in another person?
That's a really good question. I think I have like evolved a lot since then. Although it's still, I still struggle. To like, I think it is a question a lot of people ask themselves, like, who am I without all these people? Like, if who am I stripped of all of these people? Like, is there like a genuine me if I'm so different around Sarah? Like, I'm different with Sarah than I am with Luke. Like, which one is real? The one that's like talking to Sarah on the podcast, or the ones like lying with Luke in the bed? Like, I'm trying to please both of them. So do I even have a real self?
existential crisis.
Right. And I do still struggle. My girlfriend is like really pretty. And like I like do struggle sometimes to just look at her. She's like so pretty. It's like hard to believe she would want to date me. I just like struggle with it. And then I find myself trying to like maybe buy like clothes or do things that I think she would like, because I'm afraid she'll like see that I'm not like worthy. It's not just that she's pretty. She's great in many, many ways. She's incredible on every front. And I often am just sort of like, how come you love me? But I'll take it. But like, it's hard to believe it's true. And I think for me, that's more true with women. I think it's like in general, more true with women, because I was like sort of grew up to like seduce men in a certain way. It's easier to unlearn that. And like the way we learn to love women is so complex and so weird, and like it doesn't fit into a real easy like mold of like the patriarchy or whatever. Like it's easier to see when you're doing something with, like, you know, male presenting or socialized male person who like is who you're with, because it's just sort of undoing the romantic comedy tropes, like undoing them and just trying to do something different with women and female friendships. I just think it's, there's just not, the models are all over the place. They're really, really different. All my friends are so different from each other. It's hard to know how to be genuine. So yeah, I do think that's hard. And I really still struggle with it. And I like find myself shocked at how much I struggle with it, and like frustrated that I am still struggling with it so much. So I still have bangs, but I don't think that Kim has bangs anymore. She has grown her bangs out. I think that that's a great question. It's probably a lifelong struggle to navigate.
Yeah. And I mean, even just that, like that Kim doesn't have bangs anymore, but you still have bangs. Like you take what feels good and genuine sometimes from interactions or relationships with other people. And if that feels good for you, then you keep it.
Yeah.
And it becomes, you know, a genuine part of you maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just a
totally. Yeah. I think that's really real. Mm. It's a good observation.
And I mean, like, what do you love most about people who were socialized as women?
That's like, it's like asking like, what do you love most about air? Like, what do you love most about eating food? It's like, I don't know, that could keep me alive. It's just like completely life sustaining. I will answer by saying, and I've written about this a little bit, I think when you're socialized female, like you are more equipped to have what psychologists call connective conversations. And connective conversations are ones where both people are equally invested in the conversation, and the conversation becomes greater than the sum of what either person has said. Meaning like, as you, Sarah, and I, Sophie, are like speaking to each other, we're learning things from each other. And so we're growing separately and together through the conversation. Where sometimes people who are socialized male will come to a conversation that's about a problem and just try to fix the problem. And that is like not always what someone socialized female will do. So like, you know, oh man, I'm like really sad about my friend Martha who's in the hospital. Luke might say, oh, well, let's go visit her in the hospital. That will fix that. But like Kim might say, oh, what's going on with Martha? And like, why do you think you feel sad? And what things have you done before? Oh, that reminds me of my friend Sandra, who was in the hospital, and I learned this from that. And so that becomes this like this thing in and of itself that is outside of just, you know, problem solution. And I think that's really valuable.
growth through conversation.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I can really resonate with that very strongly.
Well, you have a podcast about feelings, so I feel like, of course.
I mean, yeah, that's the whole idea with the podcast, really, is to grow through having these big conversations that maybe there isn't always space for in everyday existence, although I try to make it part of everyday existence. But it just makes me think of the other day, and like Tom and I were having a very deep, intense chat, and there's me like crying, yelling, full of feelings. Mm-hmm. And him just sitting there being like, I just love you the same way I've always loved you. I'm like, okay, I don't know what to do with that. and it's this diffusing, but also, you know, there's a little bit of lack of like working through that. And like, why do you feel that way? And like, how does that make you feel? And like all of that back and forth, which is something I really, really gather from my friendships with women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I came out as bisexual last year, even though it's just always been a part of my existence.
Yay!
thanks. I had this moment where I was just like, I love him. I just love him. I love everything about him. You know, so many different types of women, and every aspect of them is always beautiful and unique and different. So yeah, it was nice to hear you and your books go through like your friendships as well, and like what parts of those, you know, had the different elements than like romantic relationships, but also the same elements of romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. And through listening to Love Without Sex, I figured out that I'm looking for a romantic friendship.
Yay!
And I didn't have the words for that before.
That's great.
So thank you for all of the interviews that you did in that, because it lays the groundwork for all of the different reflections on like what types of relationships can exist. And yeah, it gave me the words to be able to tell people what I'm looking for. So thank you for that.
I hope that you find a really happy romantic friendship.
I mean, I've had romantic friendships mm-hmm. in the past. I just didn't know that's what they were.
Yeah, right. No, I relate to that strongly, strongly.
How have you coped over the last year with like pandemic things in terms of, you know, your relationships with other people, interpersonal relationships? You seem to have people all over the globe, kind of.
I had a pretty good year. Pandemic year was pretty nice for me. So I live with my husband and then my friend and partner. I would call her my partner, but I don't know that she would call me her partner. I was just using that word broadly. And her husband. So it was two of us, two couples living in a house. And then my girlfriend lives in my neighborhood. We didn't we didn't touch for the whole pandemic. We were 6 feet apart for the whole pandemic. And that was like challenging. Physically challenging, but we live close enough that we could like have yard hangouts, and like the thing that I value most in our relationship is our conversation. So those didn't go anywhere. My boyfriend lives in New Orleans, and I haven't seen him in a year, but we talked a lot over the pandemic. And I think the thing that worked best was having people close proximity. It was nice to like have a house full of people who are all kind of like different, to bounce different ideas off of. And and honestly, it was, I take on too much stuff, so it was just sort of nice to have to cut a bunch of stuff out. And then right now I'm like in the process of reevaluating like what's going to come back and what am I going to have to say goodbye to forever. And that is a lot harder. That's much harder, because everything that I love a lot, but there just are only so many hours in the day. And so you can't do everything you love. It's just not always possible. And so you have to cut some things out. And the pandemic sort of like did that for me. It was like, well, you're not going to do half of the things. And that was nice for me. So then the things that got some time priority that maybe didn't have it before were the most immediate friendships and relationships. And And I guess it was not like a super sexy year. We didn't like, I mean, like I definitely still like having sex with my husband, but like not, we normally have sex with other people and there's not a lot of that this year. That was just not happening, but I'm fine. I didn't miss it. I think it was fine. However, like since Kat, my girlfriend and I have both gotten vaccinated, and had gotten to spend some physical time together, I was like, whoa, I don't know like how we went that long. That was really hard. I didn't realize it. Honestly, it was just sort of a day-to-day learning experience. And I think that I had a really nice year, really like good growth year for me, but it was because I lived in a small community with more than one person and not kids. I mean, like, I think a lot of people live with, you know, in a nuclear model with like one person and kids or one person and a kid or just a kid or whatever. And I think living with three grown-ups who all took care of each other was really the right amount of grown-ups to live with. So it's been a nice year.
Oh, that's good. It's nice to hear what good things can come out of it and how it helps with self-growth. And like analyzing priorities. And I definitely resonate, like sometimes it's nice when it's like, you can't do X, Y, Z. So you might as well do the other things that bring you joy and that you love to do.
Yeah.
So kind of just a little refocusing of attention. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that you and your girlfriend got vaccinated and that happens
with each other now. Me too. That's really great. I did go to like a party yesterday for the first time and was like, I can't, I'm not ready for this. Like it's been way too long. I just don't know how to do this anymore. So I'm sure that there's going to be a lot of stories about that in the coming months. It's very intense to suddenly like be with a bunch of people after not doing that for a year.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of like reflects on how important, you know, different types of socialization are in our existence. Because when we go a year without, socializing in big groups, it's totally overwhelming.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to focus on way too many things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Meanwhile, I'm having this internal experience and like, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. It can be a lot.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Socializing is hard. And we have energy budgets to manage and being really self-aware of your capacity to be around the energy of others, that's a skill to learn and to be able to remove yourself when needed. So this is your reminder that this is a good time to take a break from the podcast. You've been engaged with this particular thing for an hour now. So maybe go hydrate, take a couple breaths, get a little bit of space, and then I'll meet you back here. This also just happens to be a great time to say if you're enjoying what you're listening to, maybe you are in a position to support the podcast a little bit at patreon.com/kindaokay. You can do it for pretty low. I think it's like $3 a month for the minimum one. But it just shows you comics, shows you my sketchbook, gives you some extra podcast content, and allows you to engage and ask questions to future podcast guests, which is exciting. But also, if you're not in a position to do that financially, or like that seems like too much effort, just go give us a follow on Instagram or share this episode with somebody else that you think would really enjoy it. And that is just as important as any sort of monetary donation that you could make. So thank you so much just for being here and just for listening and engaging and processing alongside all of this complete emotional chaos. Okay, back to the podcast.
The one thing I think that scares me most is heartbreak. And I kind of had the realization that this week when I'm talking to other humans on the internet, like they're real people with a real capacity to be hurt and to hurt others. Oh, kitty cat.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
He doesn't care about podcasts.
Neither does my dog. So I had completely understand. I guess it's like the capacity to balance everybody's emotions, and how do you kind of find yourself in that sphere with, you know, lots of other people and having to basically just manage how everybody's feeling and like constant check-ins with all of that. Like, it sounds like it can be difficult.
Yeah, it totally makes sense that you're scared of heartbreak. It is scary and painful and like hurts a lot and is like inevitable. Like, it will happen because you love people, and that's just like they go along with each other. Hurts exactly as much as it's worth. So if it's worth a lot, then it's going to hurt a lot. And that sucks. Like, it's a weird deal we make when we're like, well, yeah, I'll be like super in love with this person. The more I love them, the more it's going to hurt. And I know that. And I'm just going to keep doing it, but we do keep doing it. I think it just totally makes sense to have fear about that. I'm so, so sorry about that loud sound of my cat knocking over my pencil sharpener.
Okay, it's an authentic podcast where imperfection is valued.
So you are saying the second thing that scares you is the capacity to balance everyone's emotion. So when you say that, do you mean like you take on the responsibility of keeping emotional tides balanced? I'm guessing this is sort of what co-regulation is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guessing, I'm just kind of having the realization as you're repeating that back to me that, yeah, like I take on the responsibility of making sure everyone feels okay, which,
yeah, so yeah, that's not my job. It's not your job. That's not your job. That would be like the first thing I'd say. It's not your job to make sure everyone's feeling okay. It's okay for people to not feel okay. I think like your job in relationships is to tell the truth. And also like we talked a little bit about this earlier, but like noticing reactivity is really important. And so that just means when your blood pressure is elevated and you're feeling like kind of hot, or like for me, like my head starts rushing around and it's just like, suddenly I feel like wronged. Like I just have this feeling of like vengeance almost. Like it's a big hot feeling. If I'm reactive, or like I know I'm right about something and I know how I can win the argument, that would be another cue. Like, oh, I'm reactive. I only get reactive with two of my partners. I guess two of three my partners. Cat, my girlfriend does not make me, sorry, Norman is doing that. Cat, my girlfriend does not make me reactive. I do get reactive with Luke and Bob. Then the cue is, hey, I'm feeling reactive. I like need to take some space. And that's all. We all know that word. Reactive means, I'm trying. I need to just like leave this conversation until I can be more head focused. Head and heart working together is your goal, right? So when you're like hot, emotional gut self is leading the way, that's okay as long as your head has some kind of power. I think that there is a tendency when someone says to you, or says to me, I'll speak for myself. When someone says to me, I'm feeling reactive, I need to take some space, for me to be like, oh, tell me about your reaction. I think I can handle it. I think I can fix it. Like, please, I just want to fix this now. Like, I'm so uncomfortable. Let's just fix it. And like, that is something to release, is that like need to control the discomfort. Discomfort isn't bad. It's fine. It's normal. It's part of relationships. It's helpful. All pain is helpful, especially like clean pain. Clean pain is helpful. Pain that comes from telling the truth is helpful. And that's like, really, it helps you grow. That's how we grow. So we have to like acknowledge it's going to come. So when someone says, I'm feeling reactive, I'm going to take some space, the other person's like, all right, thanks. And then you feel like, oh, I wish they would just tell me what's happening. I don't want to talk to them right now. I'm like, really want to fix it. And, you let that go. You just like go for a run, or you like read a comic book. Read a comic book really works for me. Or you like go go for a walk or you watch videos of cats or you call your friend, but you just like do something to like remove yourself from the energy of that moment, is it'll still be there. Like you can come back to it later. Yeah. And when Luke and I have those particular like types of interactions, it's really beautiful at the end. It always ends with like after about 25 minutes, Luke is like, all right, you ready to go for the walk? Which means we're gonna like go and we're gonna have it out, but it's gonna be like calm. And when we argue, when we have the conflict, when we're ready to have the conflict because we're not reactive, the conflict takes a really specific shape. And it's just sort of like one person says, goes first and says like, this is what I experienced and it made me feel this way. Mm-hmm. The other person said, let me repeat back what I heard you say. You had this experience and it made you feel that way. That makes sense. Thank you for sharing that with me. Is there anything else you want to share? No, this is what I experienced. It made me feel this way. Let me repeat it back. That makes sense. And that's like, where that's like the beginning and can be the end of the conflict. Sometimes that's enough. And then sometimes it's like, what are your asks? Like, what are some things that you need to have be different in the future that you'd like to see be different? Like, do you have suggestions or thoughts about that? And then it becomes this sort of problem solving space that's a little more curious and a little bit more open-ended. Now that we both shared and validated our experience, we can like go into a more playful, like, all right, so I think it would help me if you're going to kiss someone at a party, if you could just text me ahead of time, let's try that and see if that works. Maybe that'll work for me. Or, you know, I don't know. That's the solution that I came up with for our earlier discussed conflict, but we've had lots of conflicts, you know,
yeah,
and have had lots of things that we've both realized, oh, I need to let that go, that thing that I'm holding on to, and other things where it's been like, oh, that's like a pretty easy shift of language that I can use to just say something that won't trigger you. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. We always come back from those being like, wow, I'm just like really patting ourselves on the back for having like had such a healthy,
like we're so good at communicating.
But there's always a part an hour before that where I'm like, I hate him and like he's the worst person in the world and like I can't forgive him for, I'll never forgive him for this. But it just doesn't last that long because that's reactivity.
I mean, that's a really good model. And like, I don't know, maybe that comes under like a communicative co-regulation, because it sounds like you're really like holding space for each other to hear each other feel those feelings. Do you think that kind of works the same with jealousy, like with any sort of reactive emotion? Is that how you would kind of handle anything in terms of, because I think that's a question that comes up a lot, is jealousy and polyamory. And I like how you go into the explanation in Many Love of like the different types of jealousy that people experience. But is that how you would cope with that feeling as well?
My experience of jealousy is that it has mostly gone away in the last like couple of years. That it does still flare up sometimes, but it's a lot less extreme. And I used to be very, very jealous, like very, very, very jealous. Luke got jealous one time, exactly one time. And then he never felt jealous again. And sometimes that made me mad because I'd be like, what, are you afraid of losing me? Like, I'm so special. And like, aren't you worried that I will just leave you? But he's not, and he's right not to be worried about that. So good on both of us for having that security. But it took me like a couple more years. And I think I just had more abandonment issues than he did. And like, so I think it makes sense that it took me longer. And I think some people are not designed to be in polyamorous relationships because jealousy is not going to go anywhere. And it's just going to be an explosion every single time. And if that's you, then like, yeah, maybe physical monogamy is really important for you. And that's a boundary that you set, just like we set boundaries, like based on all different kinds of people's traumas. Like if your trauma is like having to do with explosions for some reason, like we limit the amount of like explosive noises around you, like, oh, there's going to be a firework, you know? If you have a trigger that makes jealousy something that's going to be a pattern, a physical pattern, it's physical, right? Like emotions are physical. Then you don't need to be in relationships with lots of people. That's not like the model you have to follow. Nobody's saying that. So, and I think that's probably true for like a lot of people because of how we're socialized around possessiveness and around like fear of loss, like fear that like we'll lose somebody and then we won't be safe and we won't have security. And like, I think it's really important to underscore that fear of not being safe is so valid and like really real, because relationships are how humans survive. And the fear of losing one is not crazy or like inane. It's just, it's normal. And of course you're afraid of losing relationships. And so I guess for me, jealousy was often about like, I'm afraid I'm going to lose this person. That was like at the very heart of it. Like, I'm afraid that if you meet someone who's better than me, you will like choose them and then you won't be here for me and then I will lose you. And that is terrifying. It required for me a lot of therapy and self-work and like believing in my like that I was worthy of love. And I have been in relationships that have gone through like a lot of physical changes. So when my relationships, for example, started very, very sexual and then like got less sexual and then like sex was off the table for 3 years, like 3 years, we're just partners who don't have sex. Like, this person mm-hmm. is celibate and I'm just like, that's the boundary that they've drawn. Then they're wanting to see someone else monogamously but we're still partners emotionally. And that's fine as long as it's like fine with all the parties. And then that relationship ends and now like it's sexual again. But that all sort of required like a lot of conversation of what's your boundary? How do you feel about that boundary? Is that boundary going to work? And here's the like tough part, and it is a big sacrifice, is that like if your needs and boundaries don't match, if I need to have sex with you to feel close to you and you don't want to have sex anymore, and you do want to have sex with someone else over there or whatever. You want to stay in a relationship with me, but you're not really wanting to have sex with me anymore. And I do want to have sex with you. Then that relationship might need to change in a way where it's like pretty severe. Meaning like mm-hmm. we don't spend as much time together because it's just, we have a misalignment that's just too big for us to like make it work in this partnership way. So like I've had other relationships that have transitioned out of partnership, and that's painful. It always is. It sucks. My goal is always like, transition out of partnership doesn't mean transition out of relationship. So like, still be able to like watch the show you guys watch together eventually, or like, you know, this person likes theater and I like theater and we've always talked about theater and I don't want to just like lose the part of us that talks about theater. So could we just still talk about theater? The answer to that should be yes, you probably can. Like, these wounds heal and we can usually find relationship with each other again that's different. And it can still be very rewarding and validating, even though it doesn't necessarily fit what we fantasized it would look like in the future. Like, change is hard and it feels bad, but it doesn't necessarily mean like it has to be bad or it has to be extreme. These extremes of like, I don't want to be in your life anymore. I think that the reason for that is abuse. And if it's abusive, yeah, that's a great boundary. That person's not in your life anymore. But if the relationship has to change because of misaligned needs and boundaries, then that's a successful relationship that can continue in a different way. And also it will hurt a lot. And also that is okay. And we will heal from it. It is going to take time.
That's a really nice reflection. Yeah. No, I really appreciate all your thoughts on that. And that resonates really strongly, and I really like the term transitioning because it shifts and it changes and there's a fluidity and a, you know, again, not this rigid model that it has to fit into, basically.
Totally. Yeah. And transitions also are really hard. If you don't believe it, like, just try to get like a class of kindergartners to transition from carpet time to like desk time. Like, it's not easy. Your brain doesn't want to do that. It like likes doing the same thing over and over. And it's just like not equipped to transition all the time, even, but that becomes necessary. So, you know, we can like try to be creatures of transition while also acknowledging that, God, it's going to be really hard. And I always tell people, like, with polyamory, you sacrifice emotional security and like it's emotional, like, comfort. There's this guaranteed emotional comfort that comes from like, I promise you, I will be with you forever. I won't be with anybody else. It will only be you. You will always be my favorite. And that's like this emotional comfort that you do give up if you choose polyamory. But there's all these other sacrifices you make when you make a promise like that, that you don't have to make when you're polyamorous. Like, you don't have to make, you don't have to know what your whole future is going to look like, for example. That's like a huge sacrifice to say, I'm just going to guess that in 80 years, I'm going to feel exactly the same way as I feel now. That's a sacrifice I make for you, my forever life partner, person who I'm making these promises to. That's huge sacrifice. And it's beautiful. And that's what makes marriage like so beautiful, is like, I know that I love you so much that I trust that this is going to last forever for the rest of my life till I'm dead. And that's really gorgeous. It's an incredible thing. Just like I think sacrificing emotional safety is really beautiful. Sacrifice is beautiful.
Hmm. Yeah, I like how that ties into it and has a role in it, right? Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. I have so many other questions that I want to ask you, but I want to be very respectful of your time.
I'm sorry I'm so long-winded. This always, I always feel like, oh my God, I'm just talking like much too much, but okay. It's okay.
I think it's perfect. So don't even worry at all. It's been so nice to reflect with you and to hear all of your thoughts about all of the things.
Thank you.
The last question I want to ask, and I don't think we have time for like three favorites, but maybe tell me about your top favorite bird.
I'll tell you about my three favorite birds.
Okay.
My number one favorite bird is pigeon. I love pigeons. They are so intelligent and they know how to find each other when they love each other across thousands of miles, and scientists don't know how. I can't think of anything more beautiful. They also know how to take a plastic bottle and put it over a spike so that they can sit on top of a spike that's intended to kill them in order to raise their children behind the spike so the predators can't get them. That's so smart. I love pigeons. My second favorite bird, my two other birds that I really like are, tanagers, like the whole, mm-hmm. whole group. But it's just cause they are very pretty, like paint box colors. And it's very exciting to see one. And I feel like they were, Luke's spark bird, which is like the, what you call the bird that makes you get into birds. And, Luke getting into birds was sort of really helped me get into birds, and it's helped us learn a lot of things. So I think the tanagers are really important. And then we also love indigo buntings because they keep showing up and like crazy times, like in our lives. It happens all the time. Like they, like one of them flew into a window on my walk. It was okay. On my walk to prayer porch, on my birthday last year, it was my birthday. And there it was. And they were like the first really cool bird that we ever saw when we were like bird watching. They like floated out of this bush and on this bird walk that we went on. And like they appeared at our bird feeder the day that Luke proposed to me. And they just like show up on time whenever something is happening. They're like a harbinger of magic. And it's just cool that they look like sparrows, but like sparrows that got dropped in paint. But I do want to say really quick on this subject, because like I really could talk for an hour about birds. My real favorite birds are like the survivor birds. So I love like house sparrows and robins and like birds who just adapt to us and who like learn to live with us and refuse to disappear and go extinct or like go endangered. Like they just figure out how to survive. And I think that is so amazing and just like the fact that then we label like successful species as pests is insane to me. And I'm sorry to use that word, but just like, it really does feel like some, like your brain is got to be malfunctioning. Like you're hating a species for figuring out how to live. What an extraordinary thing. That's what we're trying to do. And they do it without like, you know, destroying the planet. So I like the birds other people don't like as much. I always find them to be like really comforting reminders that when you work together as a species, you can survive. And it takes togetherness. It's never those solitary species. You know that. Like it's never like the, you know, lone hawk. Like hawks are fine right now, but you know, we've had to really protect birds of prey. It's like birds who collaborate with each other, it's like starlings who are always swarming with each other. It's those birds that make it. Has something to that.
That's beautiful. I really like that.
I have to credit Adrienne Marie Brown with that, who wrote this book, Emergent Strategy. She also wrote Pleasure Activism, which is like, if you have not read that, please go read that. But Emergent Strategy, she just writes a lot about these species, and she's a way better writer than me. She's like really, really important person, and I'm not going to pretend like that's my idea. She's just the best.
Oh, that's great. I'll definitely check that out for sure. Just before we finish off, is there anything that you're excited about working on that's coming up? / where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Sophie Lucido Johnson, just my name. And I am on like the other things, but I just don't know really how to use them. I guess like I'm on Medium a lot right now. I'm like really into Medium. It reminds me of LiveJournal from people who came of age in the early 2000s. My Medium handle is Sophie Lucido Johnson also. I have a new book coming out, but it's not for another year, I don't think. Well, a little less than now, but I finished it. Like it's done and it's a full graphic novel. And it's called Dear Sophie, Love Sophie. And I'm really proud of it. And I'm really excited for it to be in the world. And when it comes into the world, when you're following me on Instagram, you will see me brag about it just a lot. I'm really stoked on that.
That's so exciting. I'm so glad that there's another book coming.
Oh, yay. Always more books. Writing books is really fun. Hey, world, writing books is really fun. It's like a fun thing to do. Hey, Sarah, go write a book. The world is ready to hear your book.
Thanks for that.
It's really real. I do. I can tell.
I just want to really... I have so much gratitude for the space that you've shared with me today, and all the reflections and big chats and so much validation and all of the feelings and experiences and just for a little time to connect. So I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you and thank you.
It's really reciprocated. Thank you for this lovely connective conversation. I feel like I've learned a lot from you. Thank you for your beautiful podcast and good luck in the coming year of rehabilitating yourself to the earth.
Yeah, this reconnection to the whatever the world is in its weird, wonderful ways.
Yes, totally. Totally. All right. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you, Sophie. Bye.
I feel so lucky and grateful to have been able to have this conversation with Sophie. And it's probably, I know that I reflect on my own experiences quite a lot throughout the podcast. I think that's what makes it such a beautiful space, is that we do have that kind of connective communication. But this was, this was a lot, and I had a lot of questions, and I put a lot on Sophie in a personal sense, which I think she was able to handle at this time, but in the future, I really want to check in before I emotionally dump on people, basically. And so I just feel really lucky that this conversation went the way it did, that I felt so respected and validated, and you know, the space was held for me to kind of figure out how I'm feeling about all of this relationship change and growth and whatever that looks like. And I really want to thank Sophie fully and wholeheartedly for just being. It's not always that often that we get to kind of meet our heroes, and she's an empathy hero of mine. So
I am still in shock from getting to have this conversation with her, and I'm so excited to continue sharing her content with you. Please go find her, go read her books, go look at her artwork. She's incredible, and she creates so many wonderful things and helps us navigate this weird world of love. So, a big thank you to Sophie. Thanks for existing. And thank you for listening and for being here. And for exploring this weird, wonderful, emotional landscape that is being alive alongside the Kinda Okay Feelcast and comics and all that kind of jazz. It's Pride Month, and so I'm really learning to accept myself as a bisexual woman, and what that means for me and what that looks like in my relationships with other people. So, yeah, thanks for engaging with the weirdness. Happy Pride Month, and go out there and just learn how to love yourself and love others more in a way that feels good and wholesome and heartwarming. You're beautiful just for being, you're wonderful just for existing, and you deserve love, however that looks like for you. Thanks for listening. Stay weird and wonderful until next time.